Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. Today, the role of interesting person is being played by my friend Brad Ferris. Brad is the principal advisor at Anchor Advisors, and he's obsessed with helping creative agency owners get from $1 million in sales to $5 million in sales through peer learning and rapid feedback. He's got some other obsessions, but we'll leave those for off the air. How are you doing today, Brad?
I'm excellent, man. How are you?
Oh, man, living the dream. And usually this is where I talk about the sponsor for the show. We don't have one, just weren't able to get all of the ducks in a row because of the pandemic we're in.
Sure.
So I just went to my refrigerator and pulled out a Schlitz because I had a couple of bottles of Schlitz there. So I am going to be enjoying this. We've talked a lot this season with people who attribute specific beers and drinks to certain parts of their life. Mm-hmm. And I will say that it's a great summer beer. I would never say it's an amazing beer, but it's a great summer beer. And also this always has this association for me with Milwaukee, the city I grew up in, and
yeah,
kind of getting stuff done. It just reminds me of my grandpa and my uncles and my dad, and they always had Schlitz or PBR when I was growing up. So
when it's hot outside and you got a cold Schlitz, that's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing at all.
You're living right.
So yeah, thank you. So here is the question to start us off with. Both you and I are professional advice givers as coaches,
sure,
as consultants. Talk me through this. Like, people want advice, but they also rarely want to listen to the advice that is given to them.
Mm.
So what have you found works to help people actually listen to the advice they need to hear?
Wow, I got like five answers to this. Can I give you the obnoxious answer that I've been using lately?
Sure. Have you listened to this podcast? Yeah, of course.
So lately I've been saying to people, listen, you know what to do. Why are you asking me? Like what are the things you know that you need to do?
Mm-hmm.
And they know, right? They know what they need to do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great. So you know what you need to do. Let's talk about why you're not doing it.
Right.
Because it's more important that you do the things that you already know than to get a whole bunch more information about things that you could do that you also aren't going to do.
I don't think that's an obnoxious answer. I think that that is actually a very straightforward answer. In fact, one of the things as a coach, like when I'm working one-on-one with somebody, one of the first assignments I give is, tell me one thing that if you stopped doing it right now, it would help your business.
Mm-hmm.
And what's one thing that you're not currently doing that if you started doing, it would help your business?
Yep.
Nobody goes, I have no idea. They go, well, how many can I write down?
Right.
You know, so is it really just an execution issue? You think, like, what have you found in over your career? Like, what's really standing in people's way?
Well, I think that when we say just an execution issue, it kind of minimizes the real deal. I mean, one of my business heroes is a guy named David Maister. And in the 50s, he started studying service firms when everyone else was studying industrial firms and all the money was in looking at like GE and these big industrial firms. He was studying service firms. And he wrote like 30 books in the following, I don't know, 40 years, something like that. And his last book was called Strategy and the Fat Smoker. And he said, listen, I'm about 40 pounds overweight and I like a cigar every day. And my doctor tells me that those are bad things to do, but I keep doing them. And so I don't think I'm all that different than you are, that I've written these 30 odd books and you're not doing any of the things that I told you to do in the books. So I'm not going to write you another book about new, interesting things. I want to write you a book about why you aren't doing the thing that you already know that you should do. And
right,
we all have a lot of hangups. There are all things that, you know, that we, you know, we're too busy or the priorities aren't there or it seems really hard or I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I do that thing, right? And so having that conversation about, you know, what are the things you already know that you need to do and then why aren't you doing them? I think that's actually a really valuable conversation because it starts to open up. Like if we can open up why you aren't doing the things that you already know,
right?
Then by conquering that, then all the other advice that we give after that has a more fruitful ground to land in.
Right. I like what you say there. I mean, one of the things that I've often shared is that my role as, you know, a quote unquote advice giver, whether you said coaching sure. or even watching putting together a video. I know you do put a lot of great content out. It really, like, our job is just to not give the answer, but to help somebody look at the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Does that make sense? Like tell people, I'm like, you have the answers. You just don't want to pay attention to them.
Right.
Right. And as a lot of what you just said, it's emotional or it's fear-based or it's just attention-based, especially in this, you know, really noisy world we live in now.
Yeah.
Like that's what's getting in the way. You figure out the right answer and then you go to, oh, but if I just have a better social media strategy.
Right.
Or oh, and I know you work a lot with firms that are kind of growing. So I'm sure they're like, oh, it's an operational issue. I just got to hire the right COO or CFO, or if I just hire the right person or make the right change on our website, everything's going to be perfect. But my guess is it's not that simple.
Well, exactly. Like all those things that you mentioned will have an effect, but you know, we use the peeling an onion metaphor, I think, way too often, but it's true that, okay, fix that problem, then what problem picks up? And then fix that problem and what problem picks up, right? Like owning a business particularly is a lifelong game of whack-a-mole. And and it's not as tedious as whack-a-mole. Like when you hit that mole, money comes out. It's a pretty good thing.
Sometimes. The golden mole, right, is good.
I actually saw a quote, I think it was, I used it in LinkedIn last week. Andrew Wilkinson said, stop complaining about problems. Business is problems. That's why you have a business, because there are problems in the world, right? And so embrace the problems. They're challenges. They're opportunities. This is your work.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, heck, I mean, you think about any business, you think about a restaurant, why is there a restaurant? Not because things are... You know, I go back to like my bartending and waiting table days, and there's no shift that goes well in the food service industry, right? I mean, that's
exactly right.
People are tired, people are stressed, you know, the kitchen's backed up, whatever. But that's the whole reason that you're there, so that your customer doesn't have to do that at home. Like they're out, so they're saying, here's some money. I don't want to have to do the dishes, go shopping, worry about burning anything.
You take all my problems and some money. And I sit here and have a good time.
Right. So yeah, it's not, if you have a shift that goes smoothly, that's not, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. And I, the client that's coming to us and saying, you know, I don't know how to do this hiring thing. And it's possible they don't. Like I have people that come to me and they're like, you know, every person I've ever hired has been either lucky or wrong, you know, and okay, let's try to improve on that. But just doing the basic things right. It's amazing how many people don't do the basic things right. And so just doing the basic things right, like, puts you ahead of the pack. Restaurants are a great example, right? Like if you show up and someone greets you and there's, you know, some bread on the table or something, you know, to nosh on while you're waiting, and the food comes hot and it was what you ordered, like, you think that's a pretty good time. But none of those things are, extraordinary, right?
That's true. You have those things. You're already at 3.5 out of 5 stars.
Exactly. Right?
and it's interesting because I think you keyed in on something, which I don't know why we have this hang up. And heck, I don't want to like say this is a problem that other people have, and I don't. I've definitely found myself in it, where we confuse the lack of knowledge or lack of skill with a lack of ability to move forward, right? And I can't, what I mean by that is that sometimes we go, well, I can't move for. Yeah. I can't grow. I can't be successful because I don't have a certain skill.
Right.
And I don't know if that's because like that's like our education system or our cultural milieu, which just, you know, even the whole concept of a life hacker, right? Or a business hacker is all like, well, if you just have this one skill.
Right. The cheat code. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Up, up, down, down, left, right, BA.
Yeah. It's another change that I've made in how I'm communicating with clients lately is I'm trying to talk to them about making smaller changes.
Mm.
Smaller changes are more manageable.
Right.
But if you're making if you're making your life 5% better every week, you know, in 20 weeks, you're 100% better.
Well, or even possibly more, depending on how you're compounding, right?
Sure, that's right.
It's kind of like that 1%.
Yes.
If 1% plus 1%, like that, I'm a huge fan of kind of the idea of incremental growth. We were kind of talking beforehand, like I've been learning Spanish the last couple of years. And seriously, it's 20 minutes a day, if that.
Wow.
And on my little app, it's probably 10, like, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I can actually read Spanish now.
That's amazing.
I'm like, holy crap. I actually had somebody write a review of one of my books in Spanish. And I came across it. I was like, holy crap. I'm reading this. Like, I was sitting at the coffee. I was like, ah. Now, let's be very clear. I am not going to go put myself in the middle of Buenos Aires and just, you know, be fine.
Right. You're not negotiating a peace treaty in Brazil or something.
I'm not writing love poetry. Right. You know? But it was this idea, and that's, you know, I've talked a lot about incremental growth or incremental change. And I think you're exactly right. Cause it's manageable.
Right.
And at the same time, it is still really hard.
Yeah.
Right. Change, no matter how small you make it, is still going to require effort. What do you find is helpful to help people move into this place of, I can make this small change and I can continue to do it to actually make it stick?
You know, it's interesting. I actually had this same conversation with a client earlier today, and she said, you know, what gets people to change? And I said, well, the beginning of every change is commitment. People decide this is going to change in my life, whatever it is.
Right.
I'm going to stop smoking. I'm going to learn Spanish. I'm going to, whatever it is. They make a commitment. The hard thing is to maintain that commitment over time, right?
Right.
And that's where money comes in. Money is a measure of commitment. So if I'm really committed to learning Spanish, do I buy the app? Do I invest the time, right? If I really want to feel better, do I join a gym? Do I hire a trainer? Right. Those are the things that measure our level of commitment. That's how we weigh our priorities. We're capitalists after all. Right. So the first comes the commitment, and then the measure of the commitment is the money that goes behind it, the money and the time.
So I'm going to push back on you a little bit because I want to see what your answer is to this.
Sure.
I'm not sure if it's just the money, because the gym, before the coronavirus, the gym industry was predicated, I'm sure, like if you sat down with their financial people, was predicated on a certain percentage of people paying and not showing up.
Yes, because they didn't have the commitment.
What makes it a real commitment then? I don't think you're wrong. I think actually it's more about you said something there at the end, it's the time. I think it's something about the attention that actually makes it sticky. Because we've all spent money on things, you know, who has a book on their bookshelf that they bought and they really should read, but you know, the how to speed read book that they never got through.
I think you're right about the time. I you know, as you're talking, I remembered a study I read about how much people's follow through was improved if you could get them to think of a specific time in the day when they were going to do the thing that you were asking them to do. And it was usually something so silly, like, you know, send a text message or something. And if you just say, okay, when in the day are you going to send that text message? And by picking out an actual time, it made them like 10 times more likely to follow through. And I think about this in a sales context, right? When one thing we never do is get off the phone without having made a commitment to another date.
Right.
And I think having that commitment is commit, helps them to commit to it. Like, oh, I said I was going to do this at this time, so I'm going to do it. Right? When it goes on your calendar, that's another measure of the commitment.
it kind of makes it real.
Yeah.
In their mind. And I think that's part of it. How to say this? I think that committing through money, like you make the commitment, I think the commitment through money is only meaningful if that money is a sacrifice.
Yes, it's got to be a lot of money.
Right. Well, it may be not even a lot of money, but a lot of money to that person for that thing. Because that's what it really is about, is like, are you invested?
So it's interesting that the conversation that I was mentioning that I had earlier today was about raising prices. And so the point I was making was that if you ask for a small amount of money, you get a small amount of commitment. If you ask for a lot of money, you get a lot of commitment. And when you have more commitment, you have better clients, right? They're more likely mm-hmm. to follow through. They're going to get the results that they came to you for. They're going to brag about you to other people. Like right. all kinds of good things happen when you say that.
So here's what's interesting about that. Because I think that is a very common thought. I've said the exact same thing to clients of mine. So like, I agree with it to a point. And here's the question I have is, does that then prevent someone? And by the way, you could even say, I mean, it's money's just an easy way of defining energy, right?
Sure.
You know, so whether it's time, attention, whatever it might be, is it possible that people take themselves out of development, personal, professional, whatever it is, because they don't feel that they can commit those resources? Does that question make sense?
Yeah. Another way to put it is, well, I mean, this is where I hear it when I talk to people about raising prices as well. If I raise my prices, then I can only work with people at a certain tier of success. And I want to work with people under that tier, right? And so is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, I think that's – so it's interesting because like I – you know, obviously in my practice, I definitely have like a top tier, you know, pricing for certain people.
Yeah.
And I have one that's more accessible. And heck, we've had this conversation where I told you the price and you're like, that's it?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but it's still a lot for the people who it's aimed at.
Right.
Right. Or at least that's my opinion. And I might be wrong. So school me.
Well,
if I am.
So I think that you're tiering things somewhat in terms of levels of experience, right? Like you're working with people that are
correct.
Earlier on in their career. And so
correct.
They don't have the money, but for them, it's a lot of money. And they are making a commitment because this is as much as they can give, right?
Mm,
and
so, okay, yep.
If you were working with people that were later in their career, it might take more money for it to be a commitment for them.
Okay, I get, yeah.
So one of the things that I tell people is raise your prices and see. Like you might be surprised that people will find the money.
Sure.
Also, if you raise your prices in general, then that gives you the opportunity for that person that you know really can't make the change. You can make a discount for them.
Right.
You just have to say, well, I only have 3 discounted spots. You know, like you have to have a budget for that so that you don't end up discounting everything.
Right.
But if you want to let in some people that really can't afford, you know, your champagne price, you can always say, well, I'll give you the Schlitz deal. But I only have 3 Schlitz deals.
Well, if you're talking about champagne, there's then the Schlitz price and the High Life price,
right? Exactly.
No, I think that's a good approach, and part of this is driven by I think kind of a you know some larger conversations we're having as a society where even you think about having an equitable society, right? I mean, I know this is we're going completely in the weeds, but heck, this is a pub conversation.
Exactly.
You know, I've thought a lot about everybody would like to, you know, sell Lamborghinis and Rolls Royces, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's great. But the reality is a lot of people are going to be driving Fords and Kias. And so I also think about how do you, as an advice giver, which we are, figure out how to help the whole spectrum, right? And in mm-hmm. some ways, you know, how do we make the world a better place, not mm-hmm. just, you know, help the people who are already being pretty successful become more successful. That's great. But what is our responsibility to the overall success of everyone, I guess? I don't even know where I'm going with that. But does that make sense?
It does. I mean, I've often said that what I want to do is to sell the way universities do. Universities say, okay, now just show me your tax return and a list of everything you own, and then I'll tell you how much the service costs, right?
Right.
And if I could be in that seat, yeah, I would be very equitable.
Yeah.
People somehow are reluctant to show me their tax returns and all the money that they have in the bank before I tell them what my price is. So, so I think the way to that for my services that I try to achieve equity is that I'm going to hold up that high price.
Okay.
So the people that can afford to pay it. Right. And then for those people that I want to help, whether they have the financial means or not, like I still want it to hurt because I need that commitment.
Gotcha.
But there might be a different number that hurts for them.
I like where you're going with that. That makes a lot of sense. That's a good answer, Brad. Good answer.
Thank you.
I didn't say it would be an easy podcast. Hey, yeah.
For all you're paying me, you might as well ask me the really hard questions.
Well, right. So the beer that I'll owe you the next time we can drink in person, that's...
It'll be a high life.
How much investment am I putting into this? Well, so let's transition a little bit. I don't think that too far away, though. So we are recording this. We're still kind of in the shelter in place. We're recording this in the pandemic. Hopefully people are listening to this down the road and everything is hunky-dory.
Sure. Hey, the whole planet survived. Isn't that great? You guys should celebrate.
Exactly.
It's not certain from here that that's going to happen. So if that happened, you know, have a beer.
please do. Exactly. You know, when you're talking with clients or really just anybody, you know, other business owners, because you and I both kind of are in the entrepreneurial circles. Mm-hmm. What are you talking to people as far as kind of giving planning advice, right? Because, I mean, I had this conversation literally right before we had this call where somebody was talking about, you know, she's a new business owner.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't know if I should, you know, stick it through. I had, you know, this, I was going to do it a year to make sure I could make some money. Now that's not happening. I'm like, hey, it's not like there's a lot of other opportunities out there, but and not even like jokingly, I was like, there's an opportunity cost to be an entrepreneur, like as opposed to getting a regular job. I don't know if there's a lot of those regular jobs that you want out there right now. So you're not really missing as much.
Right.
But she was asking, she's like, well, how do you plan? And I was just like, you kind of can't expect certainty in an uncertain time.
Yeah.
Like universe doesn't listen. It doesn't listen. It doesn't work that way. Kind of what's your approach to that? Like, how are you helping people work through the planning?
So I love how this conversation is coming full circle. I have two pieces of advice that I give people about planning in 2020. This is not my normal planning advice. This is the world is on fire planning advice.
Right.
So the first thing is, this is an unprecedented level of uncertainty. I've never, in 20 years on my own and in over 30 years in business, I've never had a year where it had a wider range of outcomes between, you know, July 1st and December 1st.
Sure.
And so since everything is up in the air, since there's risk and uncertainty everywhere, I actually think it means that nothing is very risky.
Yeah.
That thing that you've been thinking about that was like this crazy idea that maybe it would double your business, this would be a great time to try it because what do you have to lose? Standing still is probably terribly risky, right? So if there's something you've been itching to try, now is the time. Like, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're sort of unmoored from normal risk analysis.
Right.
The other side of the advice that I give people is since we don't know what's going to happen, pick two or three things that you know are going to move your business forward in the short term and do them every day.
Okay.
So like if prospecting is something that you have been slack on, but you know, just like we talked about at the beginning, you know that prospecting is something that you should be doing. Set a goal to do that prospecting every day. Commit yourself, put it on your calendar, do it every day. Because if you did it every day, at least you know that one thing is moving your business forward, right? Because the problem with uncertainty is it's also really hard to tell if I'm making progress. So to have something consistent like that, that if you know hey, I've done this 20 days, I've done this 30 days, I've done this 90 days, right? That is building a muscle that you know is going to give bear fruit at some point.
It's almost like we're in a time where it's not that the goalposts are moving. They've actually been taken off the field right now.
There's and none, right.
They might get put up, back up at some point. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know where they're going to go. I think you're right on with that idea of investing in two or three activities. One thing, and you're probably saying this on purpose. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but it's also this idea of investing.
Yes.
You know, it's not just, what are the activities that you're right have short-term benefit, but I would almost throw prospecting in. I don't know if it has a ton of short-term benefit.
Right.
And this depends a lot on industry. This depends a lot on what you're selling. You're selling, you know, masks right now, you might get some short-term benefit, but reaching out and, you know, developing pipeline.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of put with, you know, networking there. I've been doing a lot of writing, a lot of content creation.
Writing is another thing that I think you can't lose to write every day.
Right. Because then what happens is, yes, there might be some short-term benefit, but I think it's almost okay now to go, as long as you're doing the activities, as you said, unanchor the expectation of the payoff and just know that eventually it's going to be good.
Right.
or useful.
And that's why I'm saying, there are things you know that you need to be doing, right? There are things that down in your gut, you know, this is the thing that I should be doing. Do that thing. Like, do that thing. And regardless, like you said, of what the outcome is, when I'm talking to people about prospecting, I'm saying, reach out with the idea in your head that you're not allowed to sell anybody anything.
Right.
Because that's probably the case. Like, it's probably the case that people aren't going to buy. But reach out anyway. The skill and the muscle that you're building by doing outreach now is going to make outreach 6 months from now so easy.
Absolutely. And I think you're also planting the seed. I mean, this I know irritates a lot of people who are the sales experts and sales authors out there who have a different approach than I do. But you know, there isn't a special closing tactic to help close a deal when your buyer doesn't know if the company is going to be around in 3 months, much less if they want to buy what you're selling. And so just the idea of investing in the relationship, in the conversation. So, hey, in 6 months, when they are ready to move forward and things are more stable, or, you know, you've got, you know, hopefully a more stable environment, you're going to be more successful.
Yeah, that's right.
I like that. Besides prospecting, you know, we're talking about writing. Are there any things that you've seen as good investment activities right now?
Any kind of content creation. Personally, I'm making a video every week. That's something that I committed to. So I think any kind of that content creation, audience building stuff, if you're in a market where things are frozen, audience building is a great way to move your business forward, because you're putting people into your network who are going to buy from you in the long run.
Well, and you're also positioning yourself kind of as an authority expert, just somebody who's worth listening to.
That's right. Yeah. I have one client who, she said, you know, Brad, my processes in my business are a mess. I'm going to write one new process every week. I'm going to decide how are we going to do this thing, and I'm going to write it down, and I'm going to document it. And before the end of the year, every process in my company will be written.
I thought
that was amazing. Someone else that I talked to is like, I'm going through my LinkedIn connections, and I'm going to try to get every single one of them on the phone.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Maybe we should talk about what every single one of them means. You know, let's qualify a little bit, but whatever, you know, you do you.
Right. Well, and yeah, I mean, I don't know how many connections that person has. I'm thinking of my network going, that would be impossible. But I mean, even if they were like, yeah, I won't get to everybody, if that means they're having 2, 3, 4 conversations a day,
right?
Something good's going to come out of that.
And this particular person, they weren't reaching out to sell anything. They just wanted to talk to people in their marketplace to hear what the problems are, where the opportunities are. Like he was using it more as a market research. You know, I just want to find out what's going on in the market. And right. Because of what I do, I talk to business owners every week. And what was amazing to me is how the conversation that I had with business owners has changed every single week of the quarantine. You know, the first week right. It was, you know, we got to work from home, and then, oh my gosh, nothing's working. And you know, what are our processes? And oh, I hate Zoom. And then it was PPP and PPP and PPP. And should I keep people? And should I let people go? And then it was, you know, now it's this question of how do I plan in a year where everything's up in the air? So like every week people are having these different challenges and opportunities. And by reaching out, you don't have to talk to that many people to realize, wow, I've had this conversation three times this week.
Right. So it's interesting. We're talking a lot about activities you can do. And I think there's definitely those internal idea, you know, activities like developing processes or doing some writing or do some content, but also a big thing is just the idea of creating connections, right? Yeah. Or reestablishing them or cultivating them.
Right.
You know, actually investing in those connections and those relationships in a non-sales, not expectation way. Not right. I want something from you.
Right.
But in just a, hey, it's almost taking this idea of we're all in this together to the next tactical level, which is, okay, if we're all in this together, let's actually talk to one another.
Yeah. I think one of the great ways to reach out right now is just to reach out and say, hey, how are you?
Right.
Because you're making connection. And if you're genuine about it, people will respond. Like, we're all by ourselves in our basements, trying our best with glue and tape and everything. And if someone reaches out and says, hey, how are you? What's going on? Man, it feels good to just talk about that for a little while.
For sure. For sure. And I think we overestimate how many times our connections, our prospects, our clients, whoever those people are actually being asked that.
Yeah.
Right. And being asked that by someone who is not their spouse or child that they've seen every moment of every day for the last 3 months and who love dearly, but would love a little bit of space.
That's
not autobiographical at all.
Not at all. No.
Honey, I love you. all right. Before I get myself into trouble, that sounds like a good place to switch topics.
Sounds good.
All right. I love this. I found that a lot more people like lo-fi hip hop than just me. And I thought it was just this weird thing that I done.
It is a weird thing, isn't it?
Right. But it's totally awesome. So here's my question though. Where do you find your lo-fi hip hop?
So there's a channel on YouTube that got me started.
All right. If you say the same one that I listen to all the time, I'm going to be totally wigged out.
It's like a cartoon of a kid with headphones on. I can't remember the name of the channel.
Is the channel Jazz Hop?
No, mine's called Chilled Cow.
Okay, okay. Now I got to add that one. Although they're all kind of the same.
Yeah. But I found it on Spotify too. The same Chilled Cow he's got a playlist that he refreshes every week on Spotify. And they've got some lo-fi hip hop channels there. And it's great for background music, right? Like when you want to focus and you need something to shut out whatever is going on outside your office door, the lo-fi hip hop is a go-to.
Okay. So no particular artist or anything, just find a good,
find a good mix. Yeah.
Good mix.
The key to me for focused music is that it can't have vocals. As soon as there's vocals, my mind starts following the vocals. So it's like that steady beat that is, that's kind of keeping pace with your heart or something like this. There's some kind of biorhythm that comes from that beat. And then just some kind of varied melody. And so, yeah, I don't have a particular artist that I couldn't even name an artist. I pick up those playlists and I listen to them.
No, I love that. I think, Scott. Scott Zambuki. Was it Scott? I think it was Scott who was talking. We were talking about the whole point is to not have lyrics. Or the other thing that I figured out is to have lyrics in a different language.
Oh, yeah, that would understand. Be cool. Yeah, yeah.
That's actually been, in fact, one of the problems with starting to learn Spanish is that I can't do it with Spanish music as much because now I'm starting to know the words. But any other language, totally fine. I'm like, I have no idea what they're saying. I found there was a hip hop group that I forget the name of. They're out of, I think, Sweden. Totally dug them. I couldn't understand a word they're saying.
My daughter listens to German reggae, and it's so weird. Because German is weird because like the rhythms of it almost sound like English, but the sounds are all wrong. So it's just,
right.
It's super weird, but it's fun. I like it.
You know, we could talk about beer. We could talk about other stuff, but we are going to stop on German reggae.
There you go.
Because I don't think there's anywhere else that we could go that's any better than that. Fantastic. All right. Awesome. I'm looking forward to finding some German reggae to put on the on the show notes page.
Any other kind of reggae. A little bit more ska maybe, but you know, whatever.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right. Well, that's a good place for us to wrap things up. Brad, I always ask my guests at the end of our conversation, what's one piece of advice that you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
A better day today. So if you're really focused short term, I would think about what is one thing you can do that would make things 5% better today. Don't try to change your whole life. Just what's one 5% better thing you can do? And then do that same thing again tomorrow.
Love it. Keep it simple. Go for that incremental growth.
Yeah.
And if you want to continue the conversation, what's the best place for them to get in touch with you?
I would head over to anchoradvisors.com. That's our website. On the homepage there, there's an assessment that that helps you to figure out where you are in the process of growing your business and gives you some tailored advice for the next best thing for you to be working on. So that might be a good place to start.
Love it. And we'll, of course, put all of the links into the show notes to reach out to you. Even though they're not our sponsor, like I do have to raise my now empty bottle to Schlitz and say, hey, thank you for making summer afternoons a little bit better when they're nice and toasty. So that bottle is, and hey, they've been around since 1849. So as we're talking about entrepreneurs and building businesses, 150 plus years is not a bad run.
That's not a bad run.
You can give them all the grief you want, but they did something right.
Yeah.
So everybody, thank you so much for joining us today. I look forward to having you back on our next conversation here on Beer Beats in Business. And until then, have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business podcast.